So engaging with story, myth and image, we engage with words. So I'm going to talk a bit about Amoghasiddhi and mudita. So first, exploring mudita just a bit more. Then looking at how does Amoghasiddhi's fearlessness and unobstructed success, unstoppable action, how does that help us develop or open to mudita? And then we'll go into specifically looking at the stages of the mudita bhavana and how to approach the practice. So we've had Ratna Vandana at the start of the retreat introducing mudita to us. Banti calls it the state of being happy in the happiness of others, rejoicing in their merits and positive qualities. We can call it sympathetic joy or gladness. And I must say gladness is sort of nicer, if you ask me.
Yeah. Sort of.
Sorry?
Gladness is.
Nicer, if you ask me. Sympathetic joy just sounds a bit sort of weird or something. Like, you know, you can get what it means, but it doesn't have a kind of, gladness that's got sort of immediate emotional kind of like, oh yeah, we all know what gladness is. Mm. And just as Ratna Vandana was explaining yesterday about karana, it's like we can't go straight to mudita. It's not like we can generate mudita in its own right. What we can do is open to or develop metta. And then when that metta comes into contact with our own or someone else's happiness or good qualities, well, mudita is what just naturally happens. You know, it just sort of wells up. I mean, actually, I had a lovely mudita moment yesterday afternoon when I went out of the back door of the retreat centre and Dharma Karunya was standing there and just doing this to the sun, and the sun was bathing her face and her hands, and I could just see it was just this physical expression of delight in the sunshine, and actually I did feel delighted, even more so as personally I just don't like it this hot. So it was really lovely to see that at that moment Dharma Karunya was really enjoying it that hot. And I mean, I think one of the qualities to mudita is it is very simple. It is so not complicated. It's like delight, you know, we see happiness and delight arises. It's very, very straightforward. What gets in the way can be not straightforward, but itself, it's very straightforward. There's this lovely line out of a sonnet by John Clare, where he's talking about getting up very early in the morning, and he hears a ploughman singing, and the whole sonnet is just about his happiness and how this ploughman's song encapsulates his joy at this whole winter morning. And he says, "O happiness, how simple is thy track." And it's a very clean experience as well. It's like we delight and we let go. It's not like we're sort of delighting and kind of trying to grab. It's very, very, sort of clean, and it just sort of washes through. And mudita and karuna, it's like they come as a pair. It's like they're both essential aspects. And it balances karuna. So were we only to look at the suffering and the pain of ourselves and the world, actually, well, you can see we'd just end up probably being quite miserable and gloomy. If it were not that there's this whole other side to experience of joy and delight and happiness and, you know, just good things happening. I mean, temperamentally, people tend to have a bias to one or the other, either to noticing happiness and joy and good things, or to noticing suffering, distress and bad things. So if you are a person who particularly has a negativity bias, which I think probably more people do than the opposite, mudita is just a fantastic quality to open up to give us a much more balanced perspective on life. And there's something about painfulness where it's like we don't ignore it, do we? It sort of, it jumps out at us. Our suffering or other people's suffering, it's in our face all the time. We also live in a culture that has an extremely strong negativity bias and a blame bias, actually. So, you know, just to kind of stand still, to keep a balanced perspective in the world we live in, mudita is, it's just a quality. It's really transformative to keep on paying attention again and again and again, just noticing again and again pleasure and good things and happiness. I mean, apart from anything, it's just simply inaccurate to focus on all the negative. It's it's just completely ignoring half of the picture. So there are some barriers to experiencing mudita, which is mostly our own complication, you know, our own stories. Ratnavandana was asking yesterday about, well, what were our views around suffering? And today the question is, well, what are our views and attitudes around pleasure and happiness? So some unhelpful ones, just sort of like as I say them, just kind of tune in yourself, like, is, you know, do I have this view or not? So pleasure isn't real. Pain is real and important, but pleasure is just like this sort of blip that happens every now and again in an overall picture of dreariness and misery. And you can't trust it because it's about to disappear any moment. Oh good, some people are nodding. Right, they're probably the nihilists in the room. And of course, you know, that's just not true. It's like pleasure is impermanent and suffering is impermanent. It's neither is more real or less real than the other. Okay, another view around happiness and pleasure. It's a sort of guilt one. I shouldn't be feeling happy while people are suffering. Oh good, more people nodding. Somehow a feeling that, like, if I focus on happiness and joy and I really let those in and I really let myself experience them, it's like I'm not honouring the suffering. I'm ignoring it. I'm saying that doesn't exist. I'm being heartless. So a belief that we're insensitive or, willfully ignoring suffering if we allow ourselves to feel joy, delight, pleasure. And of course, that's not true either. We can hold both. And with the mandala of the Brahmaviharas practices, it's asking us to hold both. We're holding the whole range of experience of life, which includes both happiness and suffering. And again, just tune in with yourself and see if this is the case. But sometimes there can be a fear response as well. Like somehow, if we allow ourselves to relax into feeling pleasure or delight or ease, it's like we'll let our guard down and then something really bad will happen while we've let our guard down. So, again, just check in, see whether that's going on. And it's just very, very helpful to make our underlying views conscious, because they will be affecting, you know, they will be affecting how much we can experience pleasure and happiness. And the more we can become aware of any views like that, the more we can think, oh, that view's just kicked in again. Do I want to go with that? Or actually, maybe not. So, of course, the Buddha had a big breakthrough around this, and it was the rose apple tree moment just before he got enlightened. So, do you remember that bit? It's where he's been, you know, he's been trying all these ascetic practices, and basically he's been torturing himself and sitting in the heat of the Indian sun in the hot season between fires and not eating and not sleeping and basically just doing self-mortification to an extreme, where he realised that if he went any further, he was going to die. And at that point, he thinks, you know what, I don't think dying is the way forward. Which I have to say, I think was a good call. And so he comes up against the dead end. And actually, this is so often what happens. It's like we come up against the dead end. And at that moment, when we realise we're up against that dead end, that's the point when the creative breakthrough happens. And he has this memory of when he was a small child, he was a young child, and he was watching his father ploughing a field. And he was sitting in the shade of a rose apple tree. And actually, nobody seems to know what it is, but it just sounds gorgeous, doesn't it? So he's sitting in the shade of a rose apple tree. And what happened was a natural absorption just happened to him quite spontaneously. And this can happen, can't it? Like, probably particularly in nature and when we're feeling very relaxed. And so he naturally went into first dhyana, but there was an ease to it, and it was deeply, deeply pleasurable. And this came back to him, and he realises, oh, perhaps this is the way forward. And he recognises that that pleasure is helpful, it's not a hindrance. And actually that pleasure is going to make his mind more flexible, more at ease, more pliable. And then there's a response in him where, well, he asks himself, could this be the way to enlightenment? And then he gets this intuitive answer, which is, yes, this is the way to enlightenment. So allowing pleasure in is a key part of the spiritual life. So Bhante says, human beings are ruled to a great extent by pleasure, and we can't function well without it. It has a tonic effect that is important for our overall health. If you haven't enjoyed anything for a long time, if you haven't experienced some thoroughgoing happiness and delight recently, you will tend to feel listless and drained of energy. So if you give up the pleasurable things of this life, you will have to replace them somehow. Enjoyment is not a luxury, something peripheral to the main business of practicing the Dharma. It is not an element to introduce if there is time. It is central to the whole exercise. Only joy will keep us going in the spiritual life. Can we really take that on? Actually, so we've got the Buddha and we've got Bhante both saying joy and pleasure are central to the spiritual life. It's not pleasure, it's not joy that's the issue. It's craving, it's when we start clinging. But actually the pleasure itself, it's really, really important. So how fantastic that we have a Brahma Vihara, a whole practice dedicated to pleasure and joy. What could possibly be better? Hooray! Exactly. So what can we feel happy and joyful and mudita? What can be our objects of mudita? And basically there's two in a sort of global sense. We can feel joy and happiness at just ordinary pleasure, ordinary happiness. I mean, sometimes if I'm feeling really sort of, I'm having a bit of a ropey day and I'm sitting there trying to do the metta bhavana, I just start thinking, I hope you really enjoy your breakfast. May you enjoy your coffee break in the morning. Just the very, very simple, straightforward things. I help run an outreach group in Aberystwyth, and after I do the class, I then go and walk along the promenade. And last time I went, it was this sunny day, and there were kids eating massive ice creams, and there were teenagers sort of jumping off this pier thing into the water, and you know, it was just so delightful to see. You know, it's just so sort of innocent. You know, you've got this kid with an ice cream almost as big as its own face, and you can see it's going to sort of drop it any minute and it's going to go squish on the pavement. But at that moment, that kid is so happy with that ice cream. And actually, like, it's so simple, that sort of pleasure. Can we notice it? Can we open up to it? Why not? You know, why not? There's a verse from the Bodhicaryavatara that's just immediately occurring to me that I was going to say later. Here we go. Bodhicaryavatara, Shantideva, 8th century, amazing text. He says, such pleasure from your rejoicing is a blameless source of pleasure, not prohibited by the virtuous, attractive to others in the highest degree. Let's rejoice in ice creams. I have to say, he didn't mention. No, I know, the last bit was me. He didn't say about ice creams. But you know what I mean? That's what he's getting at. I'm not sure they'd invented ice cream in 8th century India, but I don't know what they ate in the monasteries. You know, it might be an ice cream, I don't know. Okay, so that's the first aspect. And then the second aspect of mudita, which in a way is deeper, is it's rejoicing in merits and skillful action. So one set of verses about the Brahma Viharas has the line, may all beings enjoy happiness and the causes of happiness. So the ice cream, that's like the happiness, kind of anyway. On the most basic level. But the causes of happiness are, well, every time someone does something altruistic, thinks of someone else, every time someone has a kind response instead of a harsh one, every time someone has a moment of awareness and thinks, what will be the consequences of this? I know, I'm going to make a creative choice. So those are the causes of happiness. And they're a deeper reason for us to rejoice than purely the simple kind of like sense pleasure, although there's absolutely nothing matter in rejoicing in the sense pleasure too. Because ultimately, of course, we don't just want pleasure for people because, well, you know, the Dharma tells us, and we know it in our own experience, that pleasure and suffering alternate in cyclic existence, and the kid that is enjoying the ice cream now will be wailing about something the next minute. So what we really on a deep level are wishing for people is that they can create their own sources of happiness by liberating their minds, stopping creating suffering for themselves, and so that they don't then behave in a way that is creating suffering for others. The deepest form of happiness is liberation. That is the total fulfillment, the deepest happiness. And so, you know, anyone we see who is doing any sort of action that is taking them towards that, well, we can rejoice in that. We can just think, well, how marvellous, how amazing. How wonderful. So I think, becoming a mitra, st- stopping taking the spiritual life casually, saying, I consider myself Buddhist, I really want to do this. What an occasion for rejoicing. We had Mitra ceremonies in West Wales in June, and it was just such a joyful occasion. And then when people get ordained again, it's like the depth of that commitment to liberation going even deeper. And of course, we've got two people in this room who are very, very soon going to be ordained. So how marvellous, how wonderful.
And one who's going to become a Mitra.
And one who's going to become a Mitra, yes. Thank you very much. Yes. Yes. And of course, you know, it's not confined to Buddhists. You know, anyone that we see, you know, somebody in the supermarket who's picking up fair trade orange juice instead of the value one, it's like they're having an effect, they're making a choice that takes into account someone in another country who they've never met, never seen, and never will see. How amazing, how wonderful. Okay, so how does Amoghasiddhi's fearlessness and unobstructed success help us develop or open to mudita? Well, we already had that link in the quote by Bansi between if we don't experience much pleasure, our energy drops. And of course, Amoghasiddhi is all about this freed up energy and how pleasure can do that and delight can do that. But also, the poison that Amoghasiddhi transforms is envy. Okay, I found this ages ago, and I've just been dying for an occasion to use it. Okay, so this is from Metamorphoses, which is by a Roman author called Ovid, and it's describing envy as a Greek mythical character. Haha. It's just so evocative. Okay. Immediately, the goddess Minerva made her way to the house of envy, a house filthy with dark and noisome slime. It is hidden away in the depths of the valleys where the sun never penetrates, where no wind blows through, a gloomy dwelling, permeated by numbing chill, ever fireless, ever shrouded in thick darkness. Envy's face was sickly pale, her whole body lean and wasted, and she squinted horribly. Her teeth were discoloured and decayed, her poisonous breast of a greenish hue, and her tongue dripped venom. Only the sight of suffering could bring a smile to her lips. She never knew the comfort of sleep, but was kept constantly awake by care and anxiety. Looked with dismay on men's good fortune, and grew thin at the sight. Gnawing at others and being gnawed, she was herself her own torment. I just don't think you could have a better picture of envy. You know, just that, like, gnawing at others and being gnawed. She was herself her own torment. And you just think, ugh. So that quality of envy where it's like we... And it's like this sort of horrible, sticky mixture of craving and ill will where we want something someone else has got. And we sort of begrudge them having it, and we have this sense of lack and not having enough, and you know, it's just such a painful, impoverished, sort of stuck, futile mental state. Really unpleasant. And I think it's one it's very hard to come to terms with. Like, we can feel a lot of shame or guilt at feeling envy. You know we should be happy for our friend. We should be happy for this marvellous thing that happens to someone. But all we can feel is our own lack and how come, you know, there's not enough for us. So if that's you, go back to the thing I was saying last time about vipaka and forgiveness. It's like mental states arise in us in dependence on past conditions, past karma. If it arises in us now, well, it's what choice we're choosing to do with it. We don't have to feel shame or guilt at that arising in us. I mean, I think everybody in this room, if you talk to someone about envy, I'd be really surprised if someone says, oh no, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's, you know, I think we all do have that experience. So Amoghasiddhi's released energy, that sense of potency, of, it's like his greenness is this power of life and of nature. And have you ever seen that thing where it's like tarmac or concrete, and there's a little crack and there's a little green leaf poking up through it? It's like, can we get in touch with our own vibrant life, our own qualities? So purely calling on Amoghasiddhi is one way to try to break through that sense of envy. And so ways to actually get in touch with that, like actually to get in touch with our own, our own potency, our own qualities, our own abilities, just our own sense of being enough, us being seated on that double vajra. So we've got these practices that are kind of like related to the mudita bhavana. We've got gratitude, for instance. Can we notice what we already have? And actually, somebody in this room I was doing a meditation review with was talking about working with envy, and was spontaneously telling me about how she'd started reflecting on everything she had and had come up with a friendship mandala that filled her with a sense of richness of her own life. So we can, you know, we can turn towards that and pay attention. And then we've also got rejoicing in merits. Again, a very, very similar. You can see how it's related to mudita. We can rejoice in other people's merits. And can we rejoice in our own merits? There's a marvellous sutta to Mahanama where Mahanama is saying, Buddha, you're going away. I don't know what I'm to do. And he says to Mahanama, he gives him six reflections, but two of them are to sit down and consciously think of his own generosity. So could we actually do that? You know, sort of, Debbie sits down and thinks, I was in the porridge queue this morning and I made space for somebody to get their tea bag instead of just sort of like shoveling and trying to get my own porridge. So anything we do, could we actually rejoice in our own generosity in that way, our own practice of ethics, rather than getting caught up in thinking what we don't have and what we don't do? Can we consciously make a practice of rejoicing in what we do do? And can we feel in touch with our own progress? Because actually, when we have a sense of ourselves unfolding and we've got a positive process of awareness going on in us, actually that feels so much richer and more nourishing than anything else. So if we have a sense of where we're going in our spiritual practice, that is a real antidote to a sense of lack and envy. Okay, so I think what we're going to do is have a break. And what I'd like to invite you to do is we're going to have 25 minutes. And can we take this as a pleasure practice? So by all means, get a cup of tea, if you want a cup of tea. But our focus is going to be where are we experiencing pleasure? Any simple pleasure. And then we're also noticing people, insects, birds around us. And we're noticing, well, could it be that they are experiencing some sort of pleasure? So we're going to spend 25 minutes consciously trying to let in pleasure and let in delight at other people's pleasure. Okay, does that make sense? So we'll come back in here at 12:05.